Welcome to episode 353 of the Pesky Report, brought to you by Beyond the Monster. I'm Matthew Crory. I'm joined today with by Kevin Baver and Jordan Leandre, and this is the official podcast of Getting Sliced and Diced by Your Former Pitchers. How's everybody doing?
Dude, I wish I could say we're doing better, but yeah, there's been worse things.
What do you think is the better odds, Kevin? The Red Sox getting a run off of Chris Sale when he comes to Fenway, or you getting the Wi-Fi back in your house before the end of this episode?
I think me getting the Wi-Fi. I think the cable company's working on it. I got home today. There's no Wi-Fi in my house, and so I am coming to you live from my phone. I hope the quality is good. But yeah, no, I think I get Wi-Fi before the Red Sox can score a run against freaking Chris Sale. And I don't think I ever imagined myself saying that. But yeah, this is where we are.
Love it, love it. Jordan, how are you? Thanks for coming on and joining us on our weekday show.
Yeah, no problem at all. I am similar to Kevin. Wish I could say that I was better. That was not fun. I mean, you know, happy for Chris Sale. I wanted him to do well. I just wanted the Red Sox to not do so horribly, and then compound it with, you know, the trash heap that was game one of the series. It just made it a little extra painful, but it's all about perspective. They paid $17 million for that ass whooping they took from Sale last night, but they also saved $10 million by getting their ass whooped by Sale last night. Like, so it depends on how you look at it.
That's absolutely true. It's just a matter of, you know, glass half empty, glass half full. It's a lot of money. I mean, I don't have $10 million. Sounds like a great deal, honestly.
Great savings.
Big savings.
Yeah. Well, before we get too much further into the series, please take a moment and follow us on social media and stay in touch with us if you haven't already. We certainly do appreciate it. We're on Instagram and on Twitter at Pesky Report. We previously were also on Facebook, but we've been shadow banned, apparently. We've been reported as spam on Facebook for some reason. I don't know which one of our two people that interact with the post on Facebook reported us. But somebody.
You now.
Yeah. Yes. Now, you know, yes. Now it's zero. So thanks a lot. So hopefully we'll be back on Facebook soon. We also are live streaming on Twitch on the weekends, which I'll ask you about in a second here, Jordan. But all of those things to be said, if you have an extra second out of your day to leave us a rating or review wherever you're listening to the podcast, we would greatly appreciate that as well. If you're on Spotify, leave us a 5-star rating. That would be awesome. If you're on Apple Podcasts, just a little bit of a rating and review would be great. You can say mean things about Kevin's Wi-Fi. We wouldn't really mind at all.
No, but
yeah, we appreciate any and all support. And we're going to be looking to really start upping our game on social media over the next few weeks and months. And I know we've been saying that, but like, we mean it this time. It's like when Fenway Sports Group says, like, we're going full throttle, and then they're like, no, we really mean it this time. Like, that's what we're doing right now. So that's enough about that plug. Jordan, so talk about this. Tell me about this live stream that you guys have been able to pull off on the weekend crew here. How's that been going, and kind of what do you envision, you know, taking that show, or where do you envision taking that show kind of as the next couple weeks come up?
Yeah, I mean, right now it's been pretty much 50-50 with Red Sox and then MLB at large. It's kind of difficult with, you know, work schedules to watch as much baseball as we would like to have more MLB stuff to talk about. But it's just another way to kind of get content out there, another platform for people to be able to follow us on. I mean, we've been streaming it through Twitch and our Twitter. Hopefully, our goal is to hopefully make it a little bit more interactive, get some more comments on it, because it's kind of the whole point of streaming, I think, to make it interactive and let your listeners kind of, you know, feel like they're part of it as well. So that's what I'm kind of envisioning as we move forward. It's really just been like, yo, Mason Miller is pretty sick. Like, let's talk about that for a little bit. We've had, I've gone on rants about how I'm not just a Xander Bogaerts hater. It's not, if you look at his numbers and you think I'm hating on him, It's probably because he sucks right now, but you know, it is. Yeah, but you know, the MLB show has been great so far. Brian and I are going to be joined by Sam moving forward. So that's going to be great. Looking forward to that. And yeah, you know, we'll see where it takes us, but I do think that it's going to be something that's pretty successful, you know, especially as we get closer to the summer months.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's super cool. I was able to join Jordan for a little pregame live stream that we did before game one of the Twin Series. And so that was, was that before game one of the Twin Series?
It was the Giant Series, because I had just spent 30 minutes talking about how I'd be surprised if the Red Sox lit up Logan Webb and then he didn't make it out of the fourth because they lit him up. So.
This is true. Okay, so it was about two series ago that I was able to hop on, but it's been cool to be able to interact in a live setting and get content out to you guys faster. If there's something that you'd like to see us do, please let us know, because we would love to, like, if there's a topic you want to see us cover, if there's an idea you have for, like, segments of the show, we are definitely open to ideas, and we want to help, you know, create this community and an environment where people feel like, you know, they're a part of what we're doing. And yeah, we'd love to hear directly from you guys. So if you're taking the time to listen to this, we appreciate you. Let us know what you want. And if you even like what we're doing, or if you don't like it, if you're like, this segment kind of sucks, like, let us know that too, preferably not in a rating. Like, you know, DM is fine. We'll take your feedback. But like, listen, like, you'll take your feedback. Like, we are trying to improve and make this as awesome as possible. So with that being said, let's dive into this two-game series against the Atlanta Braves, where we promptly got our butts handed to us. We'll start with game one. Red Sox did lose 4-2. My rookie of the year candidate, Justin Slayton, did record his first loss of the year, though I can say other than the walk, it was no fault of his own. How do you guys feel about game one? I'll turn it over to you, Kevin. What was kind of some of your takeaways from game one?
I literally have it written down right here. I just put whooping in quotations, and it didn't feel that way because it's a 4-2 game. But the Red Sox had opportunities. I believe it was in the sixth on to put a couple of runs on the board, right? I believe in the, what was it? The seventh, I believe they had bases juiced or two on or something like that. And they just couldn't get a run across. Slayton, it very unfortunate. But I don't think that's going to be a consistent, you know, issue. And obviously there were other factors that went into it. This is the difference between what the Red Sox are right now as constructed, with the injuries and some of the players that they've picked up and the short stints that they've had. And that's a little shot at short, that was traded to the Braves today. But you can tell that the Braves are a really good baseball team, right? And I just don't know if the Red Sox are right there, you know? And even though game one felt a little bit, it was a little bit of a stinger. Game two for me was way more of a stinger just because of who was on the mound. I know we're not there yet. So yeah, that's what I got. I mean, it was difficult.
Now, Jordan, what about you? What were some of your takeaways from game one?
Yeah, it felt like this was kind of a measuring stick series. The Red Sox have done what any kind of bubble playoff team does, and that's beat teams they should and kind of hang in there with teams that are probably better than them, at least on paper. And game one was no different. You know, they had plenty of opportunities to score. Reynaldo Lopez is one of the toughest pitchers with runners in scoring position to face. So to his credit, or to, I guess, somewhat of the Red Sox defense, it's not like it's a Red Sox problem against Reynaldo Lopez, but you know, 1-for-14 with runners in scoring position, I believe is what it was in game one. That's horrible. Regardless of who you're facing, you get that many opportunities with runners in scoring position, you need to be able to bring them in. I know Devers had, you know, three opportunities. He stranded five. He's one of their best hitters, period. But with runners in scoring position too, he elevates to another level. So it was a bad game for him. I know Rafael.
Devers has not hit well with runners in scoring position this year, actually.
Has he not? He's, I thought I checked the numbers, and he was had like an OPS around 900 entering that game.
Well, yeah. So his OPS is actually close to 900, but his batting average is less. It's in the twos. It's very, very low. So it's just a couple of home runs that he hit with runners on. It was very bad. Same with Tyler O'Neill. He's batting in the 100s with runners in scoring position.
Oh, O'Neill has been horrible with runners on base, period. I saw Red Sox stats tweeted it this afternoon. His OPS with runners on base is like 300, which is not good. Not had that good walk-off hit, but was really a pop-out that, you know, thankfully Ian Happ was playing in China. So Dansby Swanson would have had to make a Herculean effort to make the play for that hit. But like, yeah, this is a problem that kind of feels like it's been there for the Red Sox for a while, really since Tim Hyers left. I won't mention the guy that is now running things because everybody already likes to, you know, dump on him. I'll just say Tim Hyers' successor. It's just with not a lot of success, but yeah, I mean, it's growing frustrating. And against a team like the Braves, you showed that from a pitching standpoint, you're still right there in game one. Like, you're right there with the best. Cutter went, what, six, gave up only two? You got to win that game. You give up four runs as a team to that lineup, you have to come away with a victory. And they
grabbed those. You remember last year when Bayo gave up three runs against them, and we were, like, praising him for shutting down the Braves lineup, and Cutter Crawford did a better job than that, and we lost the game. You know, I have a sub point on this, but I just wanted to before we moved on to like this general concept, this is again from Red Sox stats, which we do give credit to on this show, by the way. If we use his stats, we give credit to Red Sox stats. But he's, you know, we put it out there for sub 500 teams, we're 12-3. We kick their butts. If they're over 500 this year, we are 7-15 against them. So it clearly showing, you know, that we're at least able to take advantage of beating up on the bad teams, and we're losing more than half the time to teams that are over 500. So anyways, moving on to, you know, talking about leaving runners stranded, it's absolutely unacceptable to have 13 runners left on base. You know, Lopez has been lights out all season. He has a 1.53 ERA, is lower than Cutter Crawford. He issues four walks, gives up six hits, and we only manage to score one earned run off of him. Like, that's unacceptable. You know for sure that if the Red Sox walked four batters, that would have resulted in a grand slam somewhere. Like, it's guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
So the runners on scoring the runners in scoring position, we were 1-14. Left on base was 13 batters. It kind of highlights a further issue, which I know we touched about last year. Everyone on Red Sox Twitter did, which was we needed to fire. Oh my gosh, Dave Bush. Whenever the pitching was just absolutely out of control, we said we need to fire Dave Bush. We need to fire Dave Bush. And some people were like, no, he's not doing that bad of a job. If only blah, 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 blah. And then he gets, you know, fired. We bring in Andrew Bailey, our hero, and he completely revamps the organization into, you know, a masterclass of what good coaching can do to average to good pitching. But then you look at Pete Vatse and what he's managed to do with this offense over the past few years, even though we've been a top scoring offense like last year, the year before that, it fizzles out so badly and it's so fluky that I think it might be a time for a change in our coaching there. I don't know. Do you guys agree with that?
Well, I do, but I'm just going to play devil's advocate. I think this is a byproduct of what we've seen with a lineup card that is completely being mixed and matched with every single night, right? So because of the injuries, because of the IL stints, we have players going down to AAA. We have players coming up. We are signing guys. We are trading for guys. And what happens is good teams, especially good teams that stay healthy, they have a continuity 1-9 with very little variation. And what we're seeing very early on in this season, I mean, you just went through the numbers. We're 2-5 in May, I have written down here. Against especially good teams, we got to have some stability within the lineup. And hopefully that does come as guys get healthy and roles start to grow a little bit more. I'm not ready to fire anyone. I mean, it's May 9th and I want to see this thing through. We got to play better against better teams and hopefully with some more consistency within the lineup card that's being submitted, hopefully the offense will get a kickstart.
What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, like, theoretically, I agree with everything Kevin just said. Like, you know, it's still early in the season. It's kind of been a mixed bag of results and, you know, lineup construction, injuries left and right. I mean, Yoshida's been out for a bit. Casas has been out for, you know, a few weeks now as well. You've been bringing guys in left and right. I mean, Dom Smith, Garrett Cooper, Zach Short, all guys that weren't even in the organization mid-April are now playing for you. Pretty consistently. I mean, just Short played two games, but and then got DFA'd, but and then traded to Atlanta. But I mean, this is a problem that's been with the Red Sox for a few years. Like I said, since Tim Hyers left, really, that there's been so many inconsistencies within the lineup, and to a degree, it's a talent issue. They're not as loaded as some of these other teams are. I mean, we've been seeing the Red Sox rely on veterans for a while. But I just think back to 2022. I know the baseballs had been deadened a little bit in 2022, but that lineup, like JD Martinez, and I know he battled some injuries, and so did Bogarts and everybody. But the power was just gone altogether, and we've seen it so far this year as well. They just went what, like five games without a home run, and at a point I think it was seven games without a home run that wasn't hit by Seidon Rafaela. Like, that's not good. And I know they've been playing some games on the road, and it's not as easy to hit home runs on the road as it is at Fenway, but that's a problem. And you got guys like Devers in the lineup, who, by the way, has not homered at Fenway yet this season. Tyler O'Neill in the lineup, who can't hit with guys on base so far this season. I mean, Casas, you know, was really your steady home run production, but he's been hurt. It's a mixed bag, but at a certain point, results speak for themselves. Like, Dave Bush got fired despite all the injuries in 2022, and then even last year to a degree. Pete Fatsy shouldn't be given such an extensive leash. I don't know what dirt he has on the organization, but, you know, at a certain point, the results speak for themselves, or lack thereof, and they're not speaking very highly about Pete Fatsy right now.
Yeah, like, absolutely. We need someone who is, like, the driveline equivalent of Andrew Bailey. Like, who is the hitting equivalent of Andrew Bailey that we can bring in here and just revamp the philosophy? Because, you know, that's really what it's going to come down to. We thought we needed change of positions, and everything that we've kind of asked to improve upon, you know, we've seen improvements in, other than this fluky offense. And I think that's the most frustrating thing, is because, like, a great example is Rafael Devers last season. And everyone looks at his end of season results, and you're like, wow, he actually had a decent metric season. Like, if you look at his results, you know, and he won a Silver Slugger for his position. And you think, like, okay, like, he had actually had a decent season. But when he came up to bat in a clutch situation, I never thought he was going to get a hit. When, you know, when he would be batting, it just felt like he was constantly in a slump unless he was facing the Yankees. And I just, you know, that's a perfect example of, like, this type of offense, because we'll go through hot stretches, but the majority of the time it's so inconsistent that you're like, you literally have to have your pitching be perfect in order to win these games. So far this season, it pretty much has been. So we've been winning these games. But, like, you think about, like, when was the last time Kenley even had a save opportunity? It's got to be almost 2 weeks. Almost, because the last time he came out and pitched, it was in a non-save opportunity. And I think the time before that as well. I think the last time that he had he struck out the side against the Giants, maybe in the first game of the Giants series. And that might've been the last save opportunity that he had. But, like, we're either winning by a blowout or losing, and there's no in between. So the pitching has just been such a problem. I mean, not the pitching. Pitching hasn't been a problem. I'm sorry. The hitting has been a problem. The pitching has not been a problem so far. But what were we going to say, Kevin?
And this is something, and this was a narrative that I've been kind of outspoken about, and I usually get a lot of heat for it, but Devers is a guy, and me personally, I believe that needs protection in the lineup. And when Casas goes down, and when you're filling in guys like, you know, Tyler O'Neill, strong right-handed bat, but Devers thrived the most when Xander and JD were kind of sandwiched around him. And I'm not saying that Xander's has his struggles out in San Diego. Jordan can speak to that. But
I couldn't, but I can.
And JD's obviously not the same ball player as a few years ago either. But this is something that when they gave the extension to Devers, I really was really, really hoping that you added another strong bat with him, right? A strong, consistent, high profile bat with him, because that is something that Devers is going to thrive off of, right? And the protection in the lineup for Devers, and Matt just spoke to it, you know, I don't feel that way when he gets in the batter's box and there's an important situation in the game that he is going to get that clutch hit. I don't know. And the sample size is kind of small right now, but you know, there has to be some sort of continuity and especially protection around Devers in this lineup.
It's kind of crazy because you look at like our lineup right now and you say Devers is surrounded by someone behind him hitting 292 with 1,000 OPS and the batter behind him 287 with an 839 OPS and the person in front of him 267 with a 759 OPS. And you say, how is that not protected in the lineup? And, you know, that's not even talking about Connor Wong, but like it's crazy that they're all like hitting individually, but they're not hitting well as a team. Like that's the frustrating part.
That's what I'm saying. Like in spurts, yes. The numbers from a metric standpoint, we can look at the numbers, we can crunch them down. But when you're watching the game and you see these guys, and yes, one may get a hit, one out, the next guy gets an out, the next guy gets a hit. But it's not it's not linear, right? It's not happening one after the other, and we're getting on these offensive rolls and these teams. Yes, we do get hot. Yes, the bats will get hot at some point, and I do believe that. I just would have really, really liked to see more of a high profile presence to kind of have Devers feed off of. And yes, the numbers are great around Devers. I understand that, and that's the argument that's always thrown at me. But it's very much individual. It's very much individual and not collective.
Yeah, this is kind of like in a lot of ways, like when the Oklahoma City Thunder got Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, it's like all three of them individually had pretty good seasons, but it didn't work out very well. It was almost like my turn, your turn. And it speaks to, in my opinion, the lack of power that the Red Sox have. I know Devers and O'Neill are carrying the load from a power standpoint. Connor Wong's also chipped, I think, 5 home runs to this point in the season as well. But as a team, they don't hit for enough power. And it's very hard against the kind of quality pitching in baseball now to stack hits together. So you need to be a patient team. You need to be able to take your walks because, again, getting hits is hard in baseball. Take your walks and hit the ball out of the damn ballpark. And it's difficult when you're on your third and fourth, third, first baseman of the season. Like, again, Dom Smith and Garrett Cooper were not in the organization 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Like, there's a lot of things that need to be worked out there. But this team as a whole, it's like you've been saying, such individual success. And this is like the ultimate team game. Like, we talked, like, The big thing with the Angels was, wow, they had Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout, and they couldn't win. That's because those two individually were awesome. The other seven were horrible. And the Red Sox have guys that are individually good, but the team as a whole is very clunky, and they just don't get the job done. And I don't know what happened. I mean, it just feels like every time they start a rally, it's like, oh, here's Raffaello, who I know leads the team and runs batted in, but he's not been very good offensively over the course of the season. I know he's been good the last couple of weeks, but it's like the worst possible part of the lineup comes up when they finally have strung together some hits. That's why the power is important, and they don't have any.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're spot on with that. It doesn't also help that they're second in the league in strikeouts.
That sucks.
So too. Like that kind of sucks. But what's crazy is, I know you said that like they don't have any power. The thing is, man, like, they're a top 10 team in slugging percentage. Like, they're they it's like a weird amount of power. Like there was actually, let me see where we rank in home runs in the league.
It's still going to be top 7 or 8 probably,
yeah,
but again, it's like so
we
many
were games. Yeah. So well, we actually over. We dropped all the way down to 14th. I think with that cold stretch that we had with like those multiple games without a home run. But there was a point when, you know, it was us and the Orioles were number 2. And then we've just seen a fall off because we're at 38 now, and the Orioles have kept going. They're at 57. They're leading the league. We were up there with the Orioles and the Dodgers. We should be at 50-something home runs right now. We are about, 12 home runs behind where we should have been if we had kept up that pace.
And this is something where the and I know I'm going to sound like a boomer, but this is something where metrics – to me and stats to me, I get very conflicted on, because when the stats look good and we're playing well, then I want to read them and I want to go through them and I want to give that praise and look at the advanced metrics and let's look at OBP versus OPS and all those things. The issue here, and we keep coming home to it, is continuity. And the continuity is just not there right now. And unfortunately, good teams have continuity and it results in success. We have individuals and although those metrics, and they're going to come from my head, look at these numbers, look at these numbers, look at these numbers. But when you don't have continuity with those numbers, and it just doesn't pass the eye test when you're watching the game, it just doesn't.
Right. Yeah, that I can definitely agree with. Fun fact, though, we do lead the league in triples.
Oh, it helps. It helps when your leadoff guy leads the league in triples, too.
Jaren Duran just running for days.
So can we just talk about finish talking about game one here and talk about Jaren Duran while we're on that topic? Duran had a double and a triple in game one. Is anyone hotter than Jaren Duran right now on the team that you can think of?
Devers was until this the past few games, but yeah, it's been basically Jaren.
Maybe Connor Wong.
Oh yeah, Connor Wong. I'll give him his roses.
Like but Wong's barely played.
Yeah,
it's felt like so much Reese McGuire lately.
Durant's looking.
It's weird because, well, it's the strange thing is that they've won more games with Wong at catcher than they have, or with Reese at catcher than they have it with Wong, percentage wise. But Wong's played in more games, so I think they're 500 with Wong as a catcher. They actually have won more games with Reese. They have a higher winning percentage with Reese as catcher. But Cora continues to play the matchups, and Wong, I love seeing him. I don't want to get too far ahead, but I love seeing him batting in the two hole second game. Thought that was sick. Really, like, he's got the speed, the athleticism. He showed it off when the weak ground ball up the middle, he stretched into a double.
With this lineup, I like Wong in the two hole. Honestly, with what we're rolling out there right now, I'm with you, Matt. I don't think that's a bad position for him.
I guess we can kind of jump around. We don't really have to go in linear order. It's a 2-game series, but I think that between Duran leading off, Wong in the two hole, Devers, O'Neill, and Abreu, that's a really solid top of the order. You know what I mean? Like right now, I there's not a lot to complain about there. And then you start to get into Grissom, who's, you know, obviously just coming back, but he's already almost hit a grand slam. That would have been a grand slam in like the majority of ballparks. You got another single off Chris Sale. Obviously he's not exactly hitting for average yet, but it's his second, third game. Like, I'm not worried about Vaughn Grissom. What would you be your ideal lineup right now? I'll start with you, Jordan. If you were going to lay this out, and instead of playing matchups every night, like, what are you going for? Is like your, what would be your, I'm going to put these 9 guys out right now with what we have.
Yeah, so I think for me, I'm sticking with Duran in the leadoff spot. I mean, that speed is too much of a game shaker. If anything, I would drop Duran to 2, and you could maybe do interchangeably with Vaughn Grissom. I think he should hit at the top of the order. He's a guy that can get on base. He's a guy who can hit for some sneaky pop. But I think at this point, you need to put as many RBI chances in the hands of Rafael Devers as humanly possible. So I would go Duran, then Grissom, then Devers, then O'Neill in the cleanup spot, then Abreu at five, then Wong six, and then, you know, your Rafaelas and I'm blanking, Coopers and Dom Smiths, they can hit 7, 8, 9. It's just you at this point, you got to stop playing matchups and just put your best hitters at the plate as often as humanly possible. And I'm tired of playing matchups, man. If you're playing matchups and you're not scoring runs, then you're really not playing matchups. You're just putting out a bad lineup.
Literally. What about you, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm with Jordan on a majority of that. The only thing I would do is just because of how well he's playing. And once again, he's a guy who's interchangeable, but it'd be Wong in the two hole for me. And then we're pretty much spot on throughout the rest of the lineup as I have it written down here. The only thing that I would probably do is Rafael, I would put in the nine hole. Or I would, you know, even bump a guy down that can get on base at a higher percentage. Grissom is not someone I would want to put that deep in the lineup, but it's something that could be flirted with, only because when you have a guy like Duran in the leadoff spot who's, you know, getting on base, running around the bases like a madman, it's really nice when you almost have that two leadoff role with 9-1 in a lineup. It's a really, really attractive thought, and I understand that it always doesn't come to fruition. But I think back years ago when Jacoby Ellsbury first came up and he was batting in the nine hole like almost every night, because it was just so perfect for the way that lineup was shaped out to be, where you almost had two shots at a leadoff hitter. So I'm not saying Rafael is there yet. I'm not saying Grissom's there yet. We're going to give that time, but that's someone that I would consider with a little bit of a higher on base percentage, someone who can run the bases as well, get them in that nine hole.
Yeah, I like that call out with Rafael in the nine hole. I think it works really well for him there. He continues to lead the team in RBIs, so whatever he's doing seems to be working. I think only maybe because he is leading the team in RBIs would I be okay with moving him up, like right behind Wong or similar in that range. If Wong's like the five or six hitter, having Rafaela hit a little closer to that spot just so he can drive those guys in. Because if we're talking about production, like obviously he doesn't get a hit a ton, but he still has like almost 20 RBIs on the season. Like he's driving in the most runs on the team. But I think I might do something a little bit more controversial. I did love the call out of Grissom as maybe in the top of the lineup there, Jordan. That was my beginning of the season prediction. I said I wanted to see Duran, then Grissom, then Devers, then Casas. So we were going to do like a little righty-lefty at the top of the order there. I think that was like, I remember tweeting that out very early on because I was like, it's old school to not put Devers at the two spot, but it would make the righty-lefty at the top work a little bit better. But I'm actually going to go a little bit different, and I think it still works with righty-lefty, but it would be putting Tyler O'Neill as the leadoff hitter going forward. And the reason why is the man hates hitting with people on base, so let's guarantee that he gets up with no one on base at least once a game. And, you know, if he can get on there, and then you know who does hit really well with runners on base? Jarren Duran. So who are you going to put up right after Tyler O'Neill gets on base? Jarren freaking Duran, who's then going to be able to rip one, you know, dominate there. Then we go lefty-lefty. Then we got Devers in the three hole. That's fine. Or we can go, who do we got? We can have Connor Wong, Willy Abreu, somebody batting there right behind Devers. We're basically like pushing the lineup down one extra spot. And I'm okay with that because we know what we're doing. So we start off with O'Neill. He has some speed. He gets on base or he doesn't. And then we go right into, you know, Duran. Then we go into, if I had to do it, it would be Duran, then Wong, then Devers. But you could flip-flop those two. And then after, if we want to do righty-lefty, then we could go with Abreu or Grissom in the five and six spot and flip-flop them, depending on the righty-lefty. And then from there, you know, designated hitter, we got obviously Rob Rebsnyder, who we can't forget. He's going to be fine. So Rob Rebsnyder should be at DH instead of Dom Smith or Garrett Cooper. We can't have those guys in DH. I know they're trying to get them at bats, like get them back on their feet as quickly as possible, but like we can't be putting them out in the field together. Insane.
Can I just say that I'm ready for both of them to be gone? Like
I'm with
Garrett Cooper less so than Dom Smith, but like they suck, man. Like they're just not good. I didn't mean to cut you.
There's multiple times. No, like there's multiple times that like I literally was tweeting out, I feel like Bobby Dalbec would have made that play. Or like I feel like Bob would have beat that play out. Where like it's bad, man. It's bad. And then you see Bob down in Worcester just bopping him over the fence.
I'm a Bob believer, and unfortunately he hasn't given me much to believe in. And yes, I am impressionable because my daughter's in love with Bobby Dalbec, but he's the king of the minors. He's the king of AAA. And you know, if at some point they do decide to move on from Dom Smith or Cooper, I mean, I'm with Jordan on that. I don't know how much longer you really want to walk that rope with those guys. And then at what point is Bobby going to be on the team again? I mean, I'm kind of posing it as a question. Like, do we think that Bob's going to be on this team again?
I will say they're 13-9 when he plays.
He's a vibes guy.
People love Bob. Not everyone, but
6-9 when he doesn't.
He does give Raffy massages. So, you know, maybe he keeps Raffy loose, keeps the rest of the team loose.
Okay, so you brought that up. It's an interesting point because they did ask these guys in Minnesota about the continuity in the locker room, not just in the lineup. Like, nobody is going to say Pablo Reyes shouldn't have been DFA'd because he was terrible. But, you know, him leaving, Valdez leaving, Dalbec leaving was all like one after the other after the other. And Devers said it himself. He's like, it's weird. Like, they met Dom Smith a couple hours before his debut. Like, they don't know, they've never met these guys before, and they're all of a sudden hitting behind them in the lineup and then also being terrible, which doesn't help. But, like, you know, that continuity.
It was a wild, you're spot on. It was a wild, like, rotating door because Grissom came back. They traded for Short. They had Dom, they had Cooper. Like all these guys, those four people inserted in there that like weren't with the team.
It was
an insane stretch.
And there was this weird, it's not a weird narrative, but there was this weird talk of Breslow making moves, right? That we thought could improve the team. Like, all right, he's not sitting on his hands. And it's like, yeah, but once again, we're talking about a locker room. Like we're talking about a clubhouse. Like we're talking about guys who know each other. And listen, Pablo Reyes, whatever, Valdez down in the minors and Bobby now down in the minors. But it does have an impact on your roster. There is a vibe, culture, and to have this kind of revolving door or carousel of players coming in and out, at some point that's got to be a little bit of a downer. Because if you're one of these fringe guys, you might be thinking you're next. I mean, let's be real. If you're one of these fringe guys, and obviously they don't have many options to go from, so maybe that gives you a little bit more security. But you know, okay, cool. Breslov's not sitting on his hands, but at what cost?
Good point.
Bobby was playing good defense.
I would rather have Bobby than Hamilton right now. I thought for sure Hamilton was down before Bob was.
I mean, at this point, I'd rather have Bobby than Garrett Cooper. Like, again, I mean, I'm sure, like, if Cooper in his next game goes, 2-for-3 and hits a home run, I'll change my tune, like, as fast as humanly possible. But, like, Dalbec, like, the thing that, as much, like, I'm not a Bobby Dalbec guy. I know I jokingly said that I was at one point last season just because I was bored, but I've never been a Bobby Dalbec guy. But he was a calming influence on the infield. Can't say that about Garrett Cooper. And then at the plate, like you're getting the same kind of production because Garrett Cooper's doing nothing and Bobby Dalbec did nothing. So it's like, you know, and again,
didn't Cooper almost hit a home run and got robbed?
He did. He got robbed against Sale.
Braves.
Yeah, he did. So maybe he's going to start getting it going. But like, you brought in two first basemen in the span of like 72 hours, and like what was the purpose of bringing in Dom Smith? Like, were you just to platoon? Again, we're playing matchups instead of just putting together a lineup of nine dudes who could like maybe win a baseball game. You know,
yeah.
Like it's a frustrating part of the roster.
It feels like Dom Smith's only purpose is to be DFA'd when Costas returns. Like it's the type of person that they didn't have to invest a lot of it, a lot into. He was just traded. They picked him up for cash only. Was he traded?
No, he was DFA'd and they brought him in on a major league contract or whatever.
Yeah, it was a prorated major league contract. And so all they had to do was just pay him. And that's something that they can cut him. They can trade him. You know, if they go to cut him and someone else wants him, they can trade him away. Just like they did with Zach Short today. Like, I don't know how much money they got for trading Zach Short, but in theory, it would be the same amount of money they probably traded to the Mets to get him, you know? I always wish they could tell us. We never get to see, like, what the cash considerations are. It just says, you know, traded him for cash. Like, I wonder if you're the player, if you just, like, if as a player you find out, like, this is how much they value. I don't know. But,
I don't want to bring the tone down, but as Sox fans and what we do, it is so disheartening that we're sitting here and we're arguing over Dom Smith, Garrett Cooper, and Bobby Dalbec on who's going to be the most, you know, valuable option going forward, because it's just like, how the hell did we end up here? And obviously that it started with the Costas injury, but it just speaks to like the I don't know, just what the hell happened, you know, that these are the three guys that we're going with.
Do we think that Rob Revsnyder just sucks at first base?
It has to be.
They mentioned that it was about his toe not being fully healed yet. So like that mixed with not being familiar with the position. So I understand that. And like, I was up in arms about it when they were playing him every day and Yoshida was banished to the shadow realm. But if that was the reasoning, then I can't argue with it. Like, it's just what it is. I would imagine his toe's got to be at least close to fully healed if they're playing. Before he got hurt, they were playing him pretty much every day. Like, I can't imagine, like, and it may just be a pain tolerance thing, and they're just being a little bit safer with him at first base because they desperately need him. But, like, they played Romy Gonzalez at first, yesterday? So,
it was his first major league game at first base. That was it. Like, that's what I mean. Like, he's never even played first. He's played two games in the minors, and that's his entire history of playing first base. And they put him out there, and I was like, wait a second. Revsnyder can play first base, and they wouldn't put him out there? What is going on? He must be the worst first baseman to have ever first based. And Romy Gonzalez is trying to take that banner away from him. But again, these guys are they've never played it.
Which is saying something, because we've seen Christian Arroyo tear his groin trying to play first base, and then we saw Kyle Schwarber play first base. It's just a here we go again. You know, this was what happened in 2022. You know, Costas got hurt. He was the guy that we were banking on being the first baseman. You know, you buy yourself a month or two with Dalbec, and then Costas is ready. But then he got hurt, missed like 3 months with that ankle injury, and then you're between Dalbec, Franchy Cordero, some Christian Arroyo. Like, it's just a mess. And like now with Costas getting hurt, and obviously, I mean, he was part of the plan. He was the opening day first baseman. He's established himself. So it's different this time, but now Costas gets hurt and we're between Bobby Dalbec, Garrett Cooper, Dom Smith. And then are you sure Rob Revsnyder can't play first base? And then, oh, Romy Gonzalez can play first base. Like, that's where we're at now. And it's crazy that this is like Kevin said, and he was spot on. This is the Boston Red Sox, man. Like, I get injuries happen, and the Red Sox have had like 900 people on the IL this year, but like Dom Smith, Garrett Hooper, and then could Rob Revsnyder maybe play first? Like, that's where we are. Well, that's where we are now. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's all right. We got to move on from this because we're gonna be stuck on this topic for a long time. But I just wanted to throw out the Tyler O'Neill leading off thing and see what you guys thought about that, because I honestly don't hate that idea. If you're playing the splits and you're paying the matchups, but he's been striking out a lot lately, as the Red Sox stats put out there. It's gotten pretty bad, and he's still managing to keep an OPS over 1,000. So
I don't hate it.
He's getting on base like once a game, at least.
Yeah, I don't hate it.
Some pitching callouts from the series. We had obviously a great start from Cutter Crawford. His ERA is up to a 1.75, which is crazy to say. Six Ks. He did give up his second homer of the season, back-to-back starts with a home run. And that was, let's see what inning that was in here. That was in.
I know Kelvin hit it.
Yeah, third inning. Yeah. But that was pretty much the gist of like his issues really for the game. Bernardino came in. His ERA is 0.61 on the year, further proving why he did not deserve to be in Worcester to start the season.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Weissert came in, 1.17 ERA on the season. He's looked so good, pretty nasty. And obviously Justin Slayton comes in, gives up two runs, ERA up to a 1.8 on the season. Honestly, if he keeps up dominating the way he has, I still feel confident with him on the mound. And I could see him being in serious contention for Rookie of the Year. I don't know if you guys saw the Rookie of the Year odds that were put out there, but Willy Abreu has snuck into top five Rookie of the Year odds now, behind guys that he's beating every single one of them in pretty much every offensive category,
mm-hmm,
and defensive category. So that's cool.
He was a certain former Red Sox that I won't name because I don't want to get ripped to shreds, said that was nothing that came back from the Christian Vasquez trade. So congratulations to nothing for being as good as he has been for the Red Sox since the end of last season.
Yeah, I like nothing a lot.
Nothing is very good.
I like nothing.
Except the nothing they're getting out of the first base position. That is not good.
Yeah, no.
But the nothing in right field would agree.
We want to distinguish between nothings.
There is levels to the nothing here.
Yeah. Then the second start, obviously we lost 5-0. Nick Pivetta's first start since returning from the IL. He gives up two homers to Ozuna? Mm-hmm. Why did I just say Ozuna?
Ozuna of the Braves, yeah.
Ozuna from the Braves. That man just owns Nick Pivetta. He came into this game with, was it three homers already off Pivetta? And he just crushed two more. It's insane. It was either two or three homers he already had off Pivetta in his career. We shouldn't have pitched to him. That was a mistake. Ozuna shouldn't even be in Major League Baseball because he's a terrible person.
Yeah.
Ozuna is also the best hitter in baseball since last year. Around this time, I think it's like June 1st of last year, he's number one in OPS, slugging, home runs, total bases, in all of baseball. So, good baseball player, terrible person. And really, that was in the first inning that he hit that 3-run homer. I'll give the RCA one and say that was Pivetta's fault, but they should have been out of that inning, and we're about a split second away from turning a double play to get out of the inning. It was overturned on instant replay. Pivetta had to then walk back out to the field from the dugout where he had already left, then proceeded to give up a home run, which nothing was more obvious than the fact that home run was about to happen, I have to say. Jordan, was it you that put it out on Twitter? You were like, do we kind of feel like maybe if anyone else is playing first base other than Romy Gonzalez, that's a double play? I can't remember if you put it out there.
That was not me. But I mean, that's what happens when you put guys without the experience at the position, because you're not getting anything out of the position. You have to get creative. And I know we were just talking about Rob Ref center. Can he play first base? And it's a good way to get him into the lineup. But you know, it's It's a dark age at first base yet again for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, it hopefully will not be lasting forever. But Chris Sale looked great. His 10 strikeouts, of course, he's going to come back against us and shove it. I did like that his message, he was being interviewed by Jemai before the game. And Jemai asked him, you know, if you have a message for Red Sox fans, because you're not on social media, like, what would that be? And he said just three words, thank you and sorry. Yeah. And I thought that, you know, that was pretty fitting for, you know, his message. You know, he's still talking about how he feels bad for how his last few years of his career went. And I'm happy for him that he's doing well. He's 5-1 this year with a 2.95 ERA. So, you know, he's doing what we thought he could do if he stayed healthy. You know, he's mm-hmm. dominating over with the Braves. It's awesome to see. Kind of doesn't surprise me at all. Like the Red Sox, the team that's top two in strikeouts in the league, facing someone with an elite slider. I honestly didn't think that Jaron Duran would ever get a hit off of him. He literally, it was like three pitches, three strikes. Jaron Duran's back in the dugout. You know, like I was like, oh my word, is this gonna be a no hitter? He dominated. Willy Abreu looked completely lost against that slider. It was pretty good. What do you think of the Sale start, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, this is who Chris Sale is, and we all know that he's got this in his bag of tricks. It's a matter of staying healthy, and he was starting to look like this at this time last year too. And then in mid-May, you know, obviously he had that start against the Reds where he, you know, got hurt and he missed time after that. So, you know, I don't want to say that like, oh, we're getting to that point of the year, but we're getting to that point of the year where, you know, all eyes should be on Chris Sale about whether or not he'll stay healthy. It sucks, man. I miss him so much, dude. I think Vaughn Grissom's going to be a very good player for this team, and like logistically it makes sense, but watching Chris Sale dice up my favorite ball club after he was my favorite pitcher on said ball club for so long hurt me emotionally big time.
Yeah, Kevin, what was your reaction or thoughts or emotions kind of watching that game?
Yeah, I'm going to echo it. You know, the sorry kind of hit home with me because it just speaks to Chris Sale's character. And I think he really, really loved being in Boston. And I know he has felt the pressure because of the injuries and obviously, you know, the extension and everything that came after the extension and what have you. It was mixed feelings because obviously, you know, Pivetta coming back, facing Sale, okay, cool. You know, Pivetta's pitching well, but, you know, he got injured, so let's see what we get. And I was really hoping it was just going to be a 1-0 ball game, right? Sale pitches well, Pivetta pitches well. Somehow we squeak out a run and win that game. And I think we all would have just kind of been happy with that. But you can't. But for me as a Sox fan, it's very hard for me to not root for Chris Sale. And even watching my own favorite ball club, you know, there was still part of it where it's like, man, that slider's freaking biting tonight, you know, and he got a little outside of the zone and what have you. But, you know, as Jordan said, we're getting to that time of the year. So, knock on wood, I hope he stays healthy.
Yeah, and I think like the Braves knew what they were getting into when they brought him in, and so far it's living Absolutely. Up to, you know, filling those holes in the rotation that were completely, you know, void with losing Spencer Strider for the year, and they're not missing a step. They appear to be, you know, other than the Dodgers, like just second best team in that league, and honestly they might even, like, obviously the Dodgers just handed it to them, but they might be better than the Dodgers in certain games, like in a 7-game series. I think that they keep it pretty close and competitive right now against the Dodgers. And this is without their lineup, like, heating up. Matt Olson's been not hot at all. He's looked really bad. You know, Acuna has been heating up lately, but he's not looked great so far. He hasn't looked like he did last year, at least. Who else is on that team? So many boppers.
Yeah, they have so many Riley. Good hitters that you forget about.
Right. They got Riley. They got
Riley.
Albies. Albies. Yeah. Albies.
Michael Harris.
I gotta be honest. Braves in seven in a Dodgers series, if I'm being completely honest, that might be something that we might be seeing down the pike at in the playoffs. But yeah, I got Braves in seven.
Yeah, well, what we're gonna get is Phillies Braves, and then we'll see how that goes again. But way too early to be talking about playoffs. A lot can happen in that time frame. I did want to give a shout out to the organist at the Braves Stadium, who just crushed it all weekend. Especially, I don't. Did you guys see like what the organist was doing during the games?
No, I didn't see
So
it.
he was doing custom walk-up songs for all the Red Sox. Like he would play them as they would come up, and they would be like either like making fun of them or like some sort of a play on their name. So like Jaron Duran gets up and he starts playing "Hungry Like the Wolf," Duran Duran.
Oh, that's cool.
Rafael Devers comes up and he plays Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like Raphael, and then there's a few others that are like Tyler O'Neill. He plays "Total Eclipse of the Heart," I think, or no, who, it was something by Bonnie Tyler. I can't remember what song it was off the top of my head right now, but they played a Bonnie Tyler song. But my favorite was when Garrett Cooper came up. They played the Caillou theme song. It was freaking just so good. Every single time he came up, it's dun 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 Caillou, Caillou. Like every single like. All I could see on my timeline was people tweeting out like, "Why is the Caillou theme song playing right now at the Braves game?" And I'm like, "Have
Oh,
you looked at who's batting? It's Caillou. I mean, that's what it is."
Touche to the organist. That's awesome. That's
Think I'd
awesome. I
rather
did not
watch
think
an
about that.
episode of Caillou than Garrett Cooper hit at this
Oh my
point.
God. Yeah.
I hated
Yes.
Caillou. Hated
Yeah.
that kid.
Yeah, that was the walk-up one that I enjoyed the most. There are some other good ones too that are just slipping my mind, but it almost every single person had like some sort of a play on words, a play on like their name or something like that. It was pretty good. So that was the Braves series. Anything else that you guys wanted to touch base on before we kind of look ahead to this National Series coming up?
No, not really. I mean,
No, no.
Pivetta didn't do too hot, but it's important to remember he just missed a month. So it's, be a little bit patient. And he's always due for, every time he has a bad game, it right away and he gives up the home runs. So it's what he does. You can tell in the first inning if Pivetta's gonna stink or not. And yeah, that's really about it.
Yeah, I'm
Nice to
not
see him
super
pitching
concerned
though.
about him. This is true. Before we move on, that'll be actually I'll say that for my closing thoughts. So, Jordan, you want to give us the preview of the upcoming pitching matchups?
Yeah, sure. So in game one, we've got Tanner Houck with his 1.99 ERA against none other than World Series champion of the 2019 Nationals, Patrick Corbin with his 6.45 ERA. You're really earning that paycheck. Game two, we got
He
Cooper
is the worst,
Criswell.
by the way, the worst starting pitcher ERA of any qualified pitcher this season. Just
And I
saying.
think he was, I'm pretty sure he was last year too. Like he sucks. He's
He
really,
sucks.
really bad at pitching. So the Red Sox will probably get one over seven against Patrick Corbin. He'll look like Arizona Diamondbacks Patrick Corbin. He'll be nasty.
Worry, they'll have 15 hits, though.
They'll have 15 hits, yeah, but they'll go 0 for 17 with runners in scoring position. Game two, we got Cooper Criswell against Jake Irvin. Criswell rocking his 1.75 74 ERA. He's been a very pleasant surprise. I thought he'd be okay. I just thought he'd be like a 2 over 4 guy and he would, kind of, that would be it, or maybe a 5 and dive. But he's been more of a 5 and dive, but he's been nasty. Against Jake Irvin, 3.72 ERA. It's been decent. The Nationals in general have been fairly decent. And then in game 3, the pitching matchup that I am very much looking forward to because Mackenzie Gore is going. It's my first chance of really getting a chance to watch him pitch. I know he's been on Pitching Ninja a handful of times, going up against my favorite Red Sox starter, to be determined.
Brian Bello confirmed
TBD.
today.
It's Bayo confirmed.
Bayo
Okay,
pretty sure I
cool.
saw that, yeah.
All right, cool. So it was against Brian Bello. So the 3.0, still my favorite Red Sox starter. So cool, other than Cutter. So we're rocking.
Yeah, I think unless there's some kind of a injury setback, like over during the course of the series, yeah, he's slated to make his return on Sunday. I actually, I did get a chance to go down and see him in his rehab start in Portland. Got hit pretty hard, but his strikeouts were there. He didn't even pitch three innings, but he struck out five, I think, in that time period. These guys were swinging at the first pitches. They were driving the ball pretty hard. He gave up two doubles in the first inning, gave up a home run over the monster like it was a moonshot. But there was also another play that happened, and he should have been out of the inning with a double play. And tell me if you heard this before. The shortstop bobbles the ball and doesn't turn two on a ball hit right to him, and then ended up promptly giving up another run after that. So I said, that shortstop was our top prospect. Yes. it was Marcelo Meyer. But, you know, listen, guys, they wanted him to feel at home on the Red Sox. And they said, like, you never left. Like, this is, we want to give you an accurate experience pitching out of a jam when your shortstop can't turn a double play. And don't get me wrong, guys, I love Marcelo Meyer. I love me some Marcelo. He's knocking on the door AAA. And at the rate that we've been calling guys up and then DFAing them, there'll be plenty of room for him to play shortstop in Worcester soon, I would say. But yeah, it's kind of funny how that trend continues for our ground ball pitchers. But I don't expect Bello. I guess I'll just give my prediction of the series. I don't expect the Bello start to go well. I'm excited to see him back. I just don't expect him to do well. Is that a day game, Jordan?
I believe so. 1:35 start.
Yes, that's a loss. Yeah, we're losing that game for sure. that's not going to be great. But I think we go two. I think we can go 2 out of 3 in this series. Cooper Criswell, we'll shut him down. Obviously, Tanner Houck going on Friday against, who did you say was Patrick Corbin?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're on 2 out of 3 in this series. I'm feeling confident. But that Sunday game, oof. What about you, Kevin? What's your prediction?
I'm right with you there. I was just writing it down. 2 out of 3. I like the first two matchups. Bello coming back Sunday day game, you called it. We know what's going to happen. We've seen that script before. We've seen that movie before. No, I hope Bello comes back and obviously shoves. But yeah, let's just win a series. Let's take 2 of 3. I think that would bring us to what, 4-6 in the month of May, and we're getting to that obviously in the second week. So yeah, 2 of 3.
I'm prepared to get greedy. I think I'm predicting a sweep here. I think the Nationals. I think the Nationals have been, you know, kind of a surprise team in baseball, kind of up there with the Oakland A's. Like, they're hovering around 500. I think they're actually above 500 right now, but they poked the bear. They DFA'd none other than Matt Barnes. And yes. I take that personally. And you know what? I think the Red Sox are going to take that personally. I think Patrick Corbin is still going to go 7 and allow only one run. He'll probably strike out 10. But the Red Sox are going to win that game 3-2. Prediction. I think they're going to win game 2 handily. Cooper Criswell's been a dog. I think that'll continue. And then, you know, I don't think the Bello start, I think the Bello start will be annoying. I don't think he'll necessarily be bad. It'll be like command issues, but like he'll go 4, allow 1, but he'll have like 3 walks and it'll be very frustrating, but his first start back. And I just, you know, Mackenzie Gore, as good as he is, rookie making, or a young guy making his first career start at Fenway Park. We saw it with Hayden Wesneski in the Cubs series. I thought he looked fine, but they hit him around a little bit. And I could totally see that happening with Mackenzie Gore. Maybe he gets into some trouble with some walks. And the Red Sox are due for a game where they like don't look horrible at the plate. And not a better time to do it than at home. So I'm predicting a Red Sox sweep here. I'm going to be greedy like Kevin was when the last time we recorded, which was before the Oakland series. And I said, you can't ever expect a sweep. Just go for the series win. And he was like, no, they're going to sweep. That's my attitude right here.
Hell yeah.
Let's go.
I'm inspired.
Love it.
I will say that if they go out and they roll out David Hamilton at shortstop on Sunday, it's not going to be a good sign. So we gotta watch out for that lineup card pretty closely, I think.
Yeah, this is true. If David Hamilton starts at shortstop on Sunday, pretend I said 2 out of 3.
No.
Yeah.
You gotta keep the positivity. You gotta say it with your chest, man. Three. We're taking the sweep. Three.
Sweep.
Here. I want three.
Yeah. I'm still reveling from I predicted a sweep in the twin series because I said, you know, you forget that we're facing the Road Sox. So I didn't realize it was on me. I didn't realize they were facing the Summer Sausage on the other side. I didn't realize that. So that's on me. That's on me for not. I'm sorry for not taking that into consideration. I apologize for my picks. Anyone that like put money on my picks, like again, this is not a betting show.
We've said this before.
Yeah, this is. We've said it before. This is not a betting show. Although the last time we gave betting advice, it would have hit when we said Tyler O'Neill to hit a home run on opening day, guaranteed smash hit. We gave that advice and then posted the episode after that game already happened. Like the smart people that we are. So anyone that listened to that and then bet for that, it would have been betting for a game that already happened. So, yeah. That's all we got for this episode, I think. Excited to watch some more Red Sox baseball. It's a weird tonight. It's we got the Celtics playing. How are they looking right now, Jordan?
Yeah, I got a split screen. They are not looking very good. They're only down 7, but it's like they cut it to 1, and then they just decide that they want to leave Darius Garland wide open for 3, and then drive into some trees on defense and miss a layup, and then give up another 3. So that's where we're at right now.
They're trying to keep it interesting to appease Boston Sports Radio, I think.
Yeah, they want Tony Maz to approve of this title that they're going to win.
Yeah, I don't want it to be too easy. It's a weird night for me because I've been following the Bruins closely and following the Red Sox, obviously, both of them not playing tonight. Don't know if anyone watched the Bruins game last night, but that was one of the wildest last 7 minutes of a game that I've seen in a long time. There was like 14 total ejections in the last 7 minutes for fighting.
Playoff hockey, baby. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah, I was pretty stoked for that. I wanted there to be a goalie fight so bad, but they already had pulled Swayman out at that point. So our hope of a goalie fight was diminished, unfortunately. But I'm excited to see the Bruins tomorrow, or not see the Bruins, but watch the Bruins, watch the Sox. It's an exciting week for playoffs in Boston with the alternating schedule of Bruins Celtics.
I do want to say one thing about playoff Celtics here, and I can say it freely, even though I know Kev, you're a Knicks fan, right?
No, I'm
Oh, you're not? No. You're not? Okay, well, Doink isn't here, and she is a Knicks fan, so I can say this in place of her. I love how the Knicks are in dogfights with mid-competition, and everyone's talking about how they got that dog in them, and they're going to upset the Celtics, and the Celtics are ragdolling teams that, you know, even though the Heat were injury-riddled, but the Cavs are a better team than the Knicks have faced in the postseason, and they are beating them down, and it's like, who cares? Tatum is only 7 of 19 shooting. They're washed. They're mid. Like, shut the hell up.
I'm gonna say this. My wife and I, we were at the Garden, Madison Square Garden, last Friday. I was wearing my Boston Red Sox hat that I'm wearing right now. I got We Want Boston chants as we were walking through the Garden to see a comedian, Andrew Schultz. And I'm like, when are these New Yorkers going to learn? Like, when are they going? You don't want Boston. Stop yelling it at me. I'm not a confrontational kind of guy. We want Boston. All I said, no, you don't. You don't.
No, you don't.
You really don't.
You have
your hands full with the Indiana Pacers, man. Yes. I know they're up 2-0, but they've been in dogfights with mid all postseason. Let's pipe down here.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Well, I think that's that was going to be my closing thought, was just kind of a shout out for the other Boston sports teams and how weird it feels tonight to not have baseball or hockey on. Kevin, what's your closing thoughts?
I'm on Coop Troop. Cooper Criswell has just looked absolutely awesome. It's another confident starter with under the wing of the Bailey Lab. And I'm with the Coop Troop. I see it all over Twitter. A lot of people that we interact with, It's awesome every single time he pitches, and he's just been looking awesome. So I'm riding with the Coop Troop.
Would you keep him in the rotation over Whitlock?
Oh, wow, way to put me on the spot.
In the
I
closing
don't,
thoughts, we're on the
yeah,
spot.
in the closing spot on the spot. Oh, wow. I might have to sit on that right now. No, and obviously that's going to hurt my closing thought, because I do want Whitlock to come back and have success. But God damn, has Cooper, he's looked really, really good. So who knows? It might be a dog fight.
I'll flip it over to you, Jordan. I want to hear your closing thought, but I also want to hear the answer to that question as well. Who would you take in your rotation?
I think I would keep Criswell in the rotation because I think Whitlock's got more to grow as a reliever. He can provide more as a reliever. I don't think Criswell benefits that much from like air it out for two innings, my guy. You know, I think Whitlock definitely could stand to benefit from that. I don't think Criswell does. But my closing thoughts, I mean, I kind of got into it with, you know, the playoff basketball stuff. I did not watch the Bruins game last night, but I know that this isn't going to be released in video, but I'm sure you guys have noticed that I'm rocking just the mustache right now. This was from game seven of the Bruins Leafs series. After two intermissions, I'm like, fuck it, I got to do something, but I can't remove it all because if they sucked coming out of the third period, I need something else to take off. But then they won, and now it's sticking around. And I know they got beat down last night, but I'm gonna attribute that to me not watching the game. I had to bring my dad somewhere, so I didn't get to watch. So I'm gonna attribute it to that. And so we're gonna stick with it through game three, and we'll see what happens. Go Bees.
Yeah,
The stash.
that's all. Wow, how could you do that to them, Jordan, and just not watch the game?
Sorry, I
So
had to be a
I'm
family
counting
man
on
for
you.
once.
All right, I'm counting on you tomorrow. So step up to the plate, man. We need you.
My bad.
All right. Well, on behalf of Beyond the Monster, this has been the Pesky Report, episode 353. I hope that you guys have a great week. We will see you next time. Go Bees, go Seas, and most importantly, go Sox.